Greetings to you in the precious name of Jesus. Brother Dave caught me off guard again. He said, are you going to speak from experience? When you're writing a book, the book isn't finished yet. And you don't want to give all the secrets out or mistakes. As I look over this crowd, many of you are familiar. And there are some new ones. What does this mean to me? What does it mean to you? To me, it means change. Life goes on. I was once young, enjoyed life, married my soulmate. Life was blissful, fulfilling, satisfying. Had a family of 6 children. Had 28 years of marriage, and the landscape changed. My spouse left me holding a death certificate in my hand, the time that I felt I needed her the most. What do I do with this? This is all new to me. I'd been to many seminars, including this place. This was not a strange place to go to. But I never went to anything talking about what do you do when your spouse passes away. And I've thought already, a lot of our weddings, we talk a lot about marriage and life and you know what all goes with that. How often do you hear a message spoken on preparing for the end of life or preparing for a time when you will no longer be together? I've never heard a message like that. But we do well to think. I often talk about that subject in weddings or to people, young couples. I tell them, talk about it. How are you going to cope with life? Or know each other's feelings. I waited to talk to my wife until we were close to the end of our journey. It was very short when it happened from point A to point B. And I just asked her, what should I do? I said, it looks to me like you're going to pass on. And she put her hand over on my hand real quickly and said, I want you to get married again and don't wait too long. And there was this time of silence. And that's the only time we talked about that. It was just too deep. But I was happy for her thoughtfulness. She had thought that through. And speaking of seminars, or I did a lot of studies on, you know, for counseling and different things. But this was all new experience. My spouse passed away. Now what do you do? And I remember somebody else, bless their heart, signed me up for Penn Valley Coping with Death. How many of you have been to the Coping with Death seminar? Raise your hand. Yeah, there's a good number of you. That's kind of a beginner, kind of a nursery stage for this journey. And I remember somebody else signed me up 5 months after this event or happening in my life. I went with some fear, some feelings. And I remember walking into this place, and there was just an air of, there's a different atmosphere. But by the time the weekend was over, we had made a lot of friends. And I remember somebody saying that it's not so much coping with death as it is coping with life. How do you cope with life? This person said, I wish we'd have a seminar on how do you cope with life. Maybe we should rename it or have another seminar, coping with life. The journey of widowhood, I do not wish on anyone, but it's a reality of life. We do well to let God accomplish his purpose. We don't understand that. 2 verses I'm going to give to you, and ponder these verses. They're from the Old Testament. You don't need to turn to them, but first one is in Psalm 68:20. It says, he that is our God is the God of salvation, and unto God the Lord belong the issues from death. And I used that many times in funerals before I was widowed. Another verse, Proverbs 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Now there you have it, 2 different issues. One is death, issues from death, issues of life. And in the original Hebrew, the word issues, as used in these 2 verses, would mean outgoings. And if you think of what it's saying here, he is our God, the God of salvation. Unto God, the Lord, belong the issues from death. God is the one that gives life. He's the one that can take it. Jesus has the keys of heaven and or death and hell, we could say. And also, speaking of keeping our heart with all diligence, it's out of that the issues, outgoings of life are that come about. We heard that this morning, God working in your lives, very powerful. And that's today what I'm going to be talking about some is the outgoings of life, the outgoings of death, and why are we here? I think I'm safe to say that almost all of us here are here because of a loss we've had in our lives. And many special friendships have been born out of this place. And I say that with emotion. Okay, don't disturb me. Thank you. The special friendships that have been born in this place, most of these have been from, there's something we have in common. And that's loss. We've lost a spouse. We don't need to introduce ourselves and say, well, I've got something happened to me that was terrible, you know, and people say, oh, that's too bad. You don't have to go far. You hear other people have experienced hardships too. I have a friend that's a dentist, Dr. Nash. 3 days ago, he was in my shop. Just asked, can I come over and talk to you? So he came over, and we talk a lot. He's an older man. And he brought his phone out and said, I'm going to show you a picture. And his town, about 15 miles from where we live, there's a little airport. He helped build this airport. He said there were two men that decided to go to Pennsylvania in their little aircraft. It was a special aircraft. I think it's a two-seater. They went to Pennsylvania, and they decided to come back, and on the day they were going to come back, there was rain and ice in the forecast, so they decided to leave at night, kind of beat it, get there before it happens. But they were almost home when the plane developed ice on the wings and the windshield, and so they quickly turned on their de-icing equipment, but it's too late. The wings had little weep holes where alcohol is injected, keeps the ice off of it. The windshield, by the time the de-icer, equipment kicked in, the heat or whatever, they were flying without any visibility. They could just, it was like looking through a glass or, you're looking through ice. They couldn't see anything. But they were close to home, and they had done it so many years. One man was probably 75, the other 82. The 82-year-old was flying the plane, and he was flying it pretty much by ear, because they had done it so many times, and it always went well. This time, he had some of his equipment turned off, like his barometric pressure. I don't know how all this works, but that tells you the height where you're at. And of course, this place didn't have a hangar to tell him, hey, you're doing okay. Or he just knew how to balance his plane. He had a plane leveled and it was coming down. He could see the beacon, just a red glow through his windshield of ice. That's all they could see. So they came down, he really carefully felt like this is about in position of the runway, I'm coming down. But he missed it by 20 meters, it was to the left. And took out a fence, and his landing gear was taken off, and he landed on the belly of the plane down in a ditch, propeller right into the road, hard surface road. And these men walked out of there alive. You talk about a miracle. Never hear of somebody surviving a plane crash. And I was thinking, this thing of second marriage is kind of similar. Some of us have been married before. It's an old hat. Some of you are new at this. This is exciting. Some not so exciting. Families to bring into the mix. There might be a hanger there. We're not really calling for help. We're not really control tower. We're just kind of flying without instruments. But without a higher power, we're going to land like these men probably did, our plane. And so I think it's such a blessing. I'm hearing this today a lot here. People were dependent on God through this whole journey, and he led us through that fog, through that iced up windshield. I mean, I can only imagine what it would feel like to be a pilot and just see ice and a flash of light up ahead. I wouldn't want to be in that position. This morning, I texted him, that doctor, and I said, hey, was that you? Because he's about 75. I thought, maybe it was him. He's not telling me. He's too discreet. He said, why do you ask? I said, just wondered. Because he'd be the type that might say, because he said the one 82-year-old man walked away alive. He didn't say anything about the other 75-year-old. So he still didn't tell me, was it him or not? I'm going to find out. The question I would ask is, can you love again? I think we heard that. I'm here to say yes. It's possible to love again. Is it easy? No. Thank you. For some of you, maybe easier than others. Depends on circumstances. Depends on our, yeah, a lot of things. Not everything is the same. But I believe if we're a child of God, the Lord goes with us through this journey. Even the psalmist, when he said in Psalm 23, yea, though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And I've heard evangelist Aidan Chori, he's no longer living, but he said one time, the king of terrors is the valley of the shadow of death. And I know when he was on his deathbed, he struggled. And he was not alone. I've heard of others too, my wife, same way. She struggled. But Brother Dave, you gave me that subject, or I guess whatever. Love beyond the honeymoon. That's a very hard. You ask, are you going to talk from personal experience? I'm going to try to be discreet because it involves, you know, our personal family. It involves children. It involves church and a lot of things. So I'll be very discreet, but yet I don't want to be selfish. The term second honeymoon, you've heard that statement. It's oftentimes reliving your first experience, you know, kind of reliving it again. Well, this is totally different. The second honeymoon for many of us has been with a different person, different circumstances, different conditions. I would like to see a hand raised. You may look or turn around and look at the results from this. How many of you are married for the first time? Raise your hand. Okay, maybe about a third. How many of you are married for the second time? Probably two-thirds. Okay. So that tells you a little bit, this room, there's people in here, some were married before, and you're combining experience. Maybe two spouses that were married before, you're combining experience. Or you might be combining single with married, which is experience and unexperienced. Those are journeys that you can't really find a book that says, here's how you do it. At least I haven't found any yet. Then go a step further. Have some children in your mix yet. I had 5 children at home, and she had a total of 6, 7 children. And all of a sudden you've got from family tree to family forest, you know, you're stretching. It's just a lot of, yeah, changes in the mix. Meshing two marriages with families can be a seedbed for major problems. I say that carefully. Can be. You have two different family trees that you are bringing together. Those families are very protective of their own. And we need to be jealously protect them. And we made some boundaries. Before I ever married Benita, I went to the attorney and I wrote up an antenuptial agreement. They call it prenuptial, but I wrote antenuptial because we don't sue or divorce or anything. So I cannot touch her assets. She cannot touch mine. And that sounds selfish. But you know what? When the children found out that we were engaged, the first thing one of the children said was, he just wants the farm. And she said, no, he spent money so he couldn't touch it. Case dismissed. That was a touchy thing. I knew it was going to be. Those are things that we don't like, that we were never taught. We were always taught to keep, one checkbook. Now we have two checkbooks. I never liked that. But now I'm finding out it brings rest to the family because we're not touching their what's theirs. That's not my subject. I'm going to use allegory. I do best teaching or speaking with little examples. I borrowed a little cordless egg beater from my wife. When I was a boy, I really liked playing with these things. Now, if you notice, there's this little wheel right here has a gear. I'd like to call it a ring and pinion, but I'm not sure if it's a true ring and pinion. But this little handle's turning. There's a gear here that's meshing the gears under these beaters. Now, if you have a pickup, most pickups have differentials. I'll just use a pickup. The engine provides the power that goes back to the transmission, that brings the power back to the drive shaft that goes to the differential. The differential transfers that power out to the wheels. And I like to use the example of if the ring or the pinion, say when they're new, they have to break in, same as the engine does. They break in and they match each other. They run smoothly. Now, if one of those, the ring or the pinion, breaks and you replace it with a new one, what happens? They usually just replace the whole thing because they don't mesh. Or if you have one that's used and one that's new, they won't mesh. Or two used ones, they might mesh differently. And what are they going to do? They might whine a little bit. They might get hot. Breaking is going to be much faster and the lifespan shorter. So there's laws of nature that do's and don't do nots. But this little thing here is, she likes it. I was there too. But you know, when this thing comes down to like when the rubber hits the road, and this one has problems. You know, I'll let somebody else explain why that happens, but she wants to find a new one for that. But I was thinking the seedbed for problems in families when, you know, you bring these two families together, they don't quite mesh. It takes time, and we need to give it time. We need to be gentle, very gentle. You know, in the first marriage, I remember the break-in being minimal. We're just young and, you know, you grew together, everything just fits so well. But then when that broke, and then later I remarried, she was broken. It was nice to have somebody that's experienced too. We had a beautiful honeymoon. By the way, somebody asked me this morning, how do you know when the honeymoon is over? Brother Dave, do you have an answer for that?
Well, the honey's all the moon, don't you?
Okay. When the honey is all and the moon doesn't shine. Huh? Don't know yet. I'd suggest we put that into a panel discussion. Something interesting. The past week, I think it's about three nights ago, one of the widowers that attends here a lot, he's been widowed probably 19 years. He's not here today because he's not remarried. And he didn't know that I was going to speak. So we just started talking. He said, hey, are you busy? Are you in something? I said, well, I'm just sitting on a recliner. I'm studying. For what? I said, Penn Valley. Oh, then I'm going to let you go. And I said, no. I said, let's talk. And in our conversation, and by the way, he said, I'm going to be praying Saturday morning for you. So thank you, Cliff. He asked the question, why are so many couples in our plain circles going for counseling in the middle to upper 40s? And many of them are separating. Are you familiar with that? Have you seen that pattern? I have. Good. Must not be a widespread problem. Why are people doing that? Why is that happening? The thought came.
Not in their life.
Pardon me?
Christ is not in their life.
Christ? Well, wait a minute. Many of those would say he is, but you're right. Not living out what God wants us to do. Now, Jesus said in Matthew 19, an issue came up about divorce and remarriage. And Jesus said, because of the hardness of your hearts, Moses suffered you to put away your wives. From the beginning, it was not so. Could there be a hardening of hearts, falling away from God? I wonder. The virtue of gentleness and patience, I believe, is the oil that keeps friction down when those gears are realigning. One partner might be carnal, one might be spiritual. That's huge. One might be disciplined, the other might be undisciplined. One might have bad habits or laziness or selfishness. It might be misalignment of the gears, disrespect. That's the sand that destroys the gears. And we need to complement each other, build on strength. God can retool and refit our lives, but we should not lower our standards. Never. Keep pulling weeds, keep cultivating, keep watering. Now, I believe I heard it said across this podium, and I believe the brother that said it is here. In our first marriage, it was love, friendship, commitment. Second marriage is reversed. It's commitment, friendship, then love. And I think that's the ingredient that... I want to use another example. Those of you that are farmers have tractors. Many of the tractors are rear-wheel drive. And then when you start pulling hard, which wheel spins? It's usually the rear right one, right? Am I correct? Yes, I see nodding. Why? That's the pulling wheel. And so there's a little lever you can step on that locks the two wheels in, differential lock. Then you have a smooth working together. I would like to think of that as the pulling wheel being love and the left wheel being commitment. When, how did you say that, Dave, again about the honeymoon?
When the honey is all, the moon don't shine.
Okay, when the honey is all, the moon don't shine. And that's when love and commitment kick in. And if we look through the lenses of eternity in our second marriage, can I give my spouse a better future? Can I better his or her family? Will the wayward ones, if there are any, come to Christ? Will the grandchildren, if there are any, have a role model? Can I relieve my spouse of financial burden? Can I help provide spiritual growth and protection? And having that said, it might be costly. It often is costly. When the Lord began speaking to me about redeeming this widow and her family, it was here at Penn Valley. It was a couple years into my grief journey. She had seven children. Her father had divorced her mother when she was 8 months old. Her husband had a breakdown of 20 plus years. Two generations of dads missing in those people's lives. There was a huge deficit there. I remember chafing for 2.5 weeks. You know, God is laying his finger on me, and I did not respond like many of you. I was wrestling and not quite willing. But unknown to me, one day she cried out to God for help. God gave her an answer the same day. Not a complete answer, but the answer came. I didn't know that. And it was later that we started exchanging bases of how God works, just out of words. She said, God, I need help. Send someone to help me. And there was times when my one wheel would slip. I think it was the first date. I was on the way home. Had about a 7-hour drive and had a lot of time to think. I was struggling. And there was three of my widower friends that called me, talked to me. Are you on the way home? Yes. And they talked to me until my batteries went dead on my phone. So so I was out of service. I really had time to think. And one of them said, Tom, he said, from another state, he said, I believe the Lord is calling you to this ministry. If you don't obey, I'm coming to Ohio to talk to you. So, encouragement of people, especially widowed people, is a great encouragement. And I see I need to shorten my... Looking over the landscape the past 6 years, my one stepson that I've only seen once, didn't come to our wedding, but he was wayward and left home early in life. Something the Lord is doing, he's now back, restored to the Lord, restored his family, he's married, and he always likes his hug when I come to see him. And how the Lord worked that was just, I cannot explain. Stepdaughter also angry at God. She was also a runaway. Developed anorexia. Despaired life. And it was during that time I had 4 heart attacks. I ended up in the hospital with open heart surgery from overload. She came into my room alone. And she said, I'm done with my habits. And she asked my wife, can I move home? The way God works is, can't describe it. At that ward, 4th floor in the hospital, the head nurse approached my wife. She said, we would like to have your daughter. We would school her, train her, give her a job. She could become a nurse here. So stepdaughter came in from Lancaster for an interview, and she accepted it and ended her 2 jobs. Today she's a registered nurse at that hospital. What can I say? She's finding fulfillment, and people love her there. They ask for her in person because she's caring, loving. Not the end of the journey, kind of the middle, beginning of a journey, but to see God at work, it's very touching. And during the summer, she likes to help me make hay. That just touches my heart so much. This side of eternity, things like that do not make sense. But I believe if we align ourselves with God's will and let God do the placement of our lives, we can find the gold in trials and tribulations. I've also observed in many of my widowed friends tenderness. That to me is very touching, to see people that at one time were hard, now are soft. A few days ago, 3 days ago, when I was preparing to leave, there's a friend that comes to the shop 2 hours away. He drives in every so often to talk. And in the conversation, he asked what we're doing. I said, we're going to Penn Valley again. He said, is that the place where people meet that have had losses? And I said, yes, because he remembers that from years ago. He said, you're so lucky to have a place like that. He said, everybody else goes to bars and nightclubs to find their friends. Then I said, what should I tell these people that have had losses? And he got really excited. And he started talking. He said, well, when I was 18 years old, my wife and I were high school friends. We got married. We were virgins. He said, well, before he got married, he said, when he first met her, he said, I couldn't sleep at night. I think of her. I was obsessed with her. Finally, he realized that he loved her. And they became, you know, friends and 51 years of marriage. He said when he was early in their career, he was building spec homes. He had lost money and about lost everything he had. And he told his wife, this man's going to be a poor man all his life. And she said, that's okay, honey. She said, I'm willing to live in a grass hut if he just loved me. And he loves her very much. He would not look anywhere else. He's agnostic, but he's coming closer to God. He's talking more and more about God. And asking, what shall I tell these people? He said, tell them to be honest with each other. Just tell each other. Do not hide anything from each other. Speaking about second marriages. He said, never go to bed mad. Talk it out. Some of the blessings of this journey is now I have 7 more children. Have more in-laws, more friendships to maintain, more weddings, more funerals, another home church, more grandchildren. and more of an outlet for my income. I want to give you the recipe from the Bible for what to do after the honeymoon's over. The Bible says, charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemingly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. Speaking of charity, charity never faileth, but there's times we need to kick in the differential to keep that love going in our hearts.